Imagine you're driving, right? Completely confident in your car's safety features, especially those airbags, you know, the ones designed to protect you in a crash. Now imagine getting this really stark warning from the manufacturer, stop driving your car immediately.
That's not hypothetical. It's precisely what's happening for hundreds of thousands of car owners across Europe right now.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Today, we're taking a deep dive into this urgent stop drive recall. It's from Stellantis. They're the giant behind brands like Citroën and DS, and it's for specific models in Europe. And look, this isn't just another routine recall notice, okay? This is an emergency measure, a really drastic step. And it was triggered by a recent tragic fatality. And this whole immediate crisis, it just pulls us right back into the shadow of, well, one of the biggest automotive safety crises ever, the infamous Takata airbag scandal.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And honestly, deeply concerning how a crisis that first really hit the auto world over a decade ago, how it's still having deadly repercussions today. So our mission for this deep dive is first to dissect this immediate situation with Stellantis, you know, which models are affected, why the urgency now, and what this stop drive order actually means for owners. Then we'll zoom out a bit, understand the history, the immense scale of the Takata global failure. It was just unbelievable. And we need to explore why, years later, but drivers are still at such serious risk. Ultimately, we'll connect all these pieces, you know, the bigger picture of vehicle safety, manufacturer responsibility, which is super complex with global supply chains, and crucially, the role of consumer awareness, which keeps evolving. It's a really stark reminder that some safety problems have a very, very long tail.
Okay, so let's jump right into the immediate crisis, the thing that forced Stellantis' hand here. Because this isn't one of those slow-moving preventative recalls you might see for, like, a minor software bug or something. No, this is an emergency. And it was triggered by a specific, very tragic event. We're talking about the death of a woman in Reims, France. She was in an accident in her 2014 Citroën C3. And this fatality is being directly blamed on a failed Takata airbag. So this incident, it didn't just highlight a problem, it literally transformed what was maybe an ongoing sort of slower replacement program into an emergency stop drive order. It really throws a spotlight on the huge impact just one fatality can have, right? It takes what might have been a routine, maybe even an overlooked recall, and bang, it's a full-blown safety alert, highest urgency. This suggests it's not just a part that might fail sometimes, it's one that did fail catastrophically and led directly to someone dying. That suggests a really severe immediate danger.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head. When an automaker like Stellantis issues a stop drive order, It's pretty much the most extreme measure they can take, short of maybe buying back every single car. It's not a decision they make lightly, not at all. And it absolutely implies a catastrophic failure mode. Like you said, not a minor defect, not something that might wear out eventually. Stop drive means the vehicle is considered immediately dangerous to operate. Full stop. It poses an unacceptable, potentially fatal risk to the driver, passengers, even other people on the road. It's kind of the automotive equivalent of, I don't know, shutting down a nuclear plant because of an imminent meltdown risk. It's that serious. And after a fatality that's directly linked to a specific part, well, the pressure from regulatory bodies, it just becomes immense. Overwhelming, really. They're not just advising anymore. They're often demanding immediate, decisive action, action everyone can see. This isn't about preventative stuff or even normal recalls at this point. It's about preventing more deaths right now. And the fact that the previous effort was described as that ongoing, slower replacement. That really underscores how this tragic incident was a huge, urgent wake-up call. It forced this immediate drastic escalation. It means the perceived danger of these specific airbags went from, say, a potential risk to an imminent threat almost overnight, demanding an instant absolute stop to using the car.
It's just terrifying to think about, isn't it? You wake up, think your car is safe, reliable transport, and then you get told, nope, absolutely cannot drive it, effective immediately. Because that is precisely what Stellantis' emergency statement tells owners. If you have a second-gen Citroën C3, or a first-gen DS3 made between 2009 and 2019, you should immediately cease using your vehicle when safe to do so. They've said affected customers will get a letter. Okay, but let's think about the practical side for you, the owner. What does immediately cease using actually mean? Is Stellantis providing alternatives right away, like loaner cars, rental assistance, for people whose main transport just became unusable? Or is it literally, sorry, your car is now a very expensive paperweight in your driveway? And what about that phrase, when safe to do so? What does that actually mean? Can you drive it carefully to a dealership? Or is it truly, do not drive one more mile, pull over, park it? Oh, that ambiguity. It must cause so much anxiety and confusion for, well, potentially hundreds of thousands of drivers.
You've hit on probably the most critical practical challenge, absolutely. From the car maker side, Implementing something this widespread, this urgent, for a huge range of older cars, it's a monumental logistical nightmare. Operational hurdles everywhere. Just think about the manpower, the coordination needed. Stellantis needs to get technicians out there, organize towing for potentially hundreds of thousands of cars that can't be driven in, set up temporary service bays, maybe mobile repair units, train staff on this specific, very sensitive repair, and then manage this massive wave of calls from desperate owners wanting answers, wanting solutions. And these cars, they span a whole decade of manufacturing, 2009 to 2019. That's a massive, diverse fleet to track down. Many are probably on their second, third, maybe even fourth owner by now. And then there's the parts issue, the sheer volume of replacement inflators needed for this decade's worth of cars. Considering Takata went bankrupt, there could be global shortages. It just adds another layer of huge complexity. So yeah, it's not just a big financial hit for Stellantis, though it is that too. It's an operational war zone. And as for safe to do so...
Yeah, the general understanding in such an extreme stop-drive situation is, if you are driving right now, find the absolute nearest, safest place to pull over and stop as soon as possible. And do not start driving it again. It's generally not interpreted as drive it to the nearest service center. It means stop.
Now, yeah.
Imagine getting that message while you're on the motorway or stuck in city traffic. The immediate stress would be incredible.
Well, absolutely.
And the anxiety for owners would be enormous. Their daily commute, getting kids to school, work, doctor's appointments, even just groceries.
Yeah.
Suddenly compromised, possibly for weeks, maybe months. Who knows how long the fix takes? And yeah, you asked about legal and insurance stuff. Huge implications. If someone keeps driving after getting that explicit warning, it could potentially void their insurance if they have an accident. And they could be held personally liable for damages, injuries, even deaths. Potentially facing criminal charges in some places because they knowingly operated a vehicle declared unsafe by the maker and regulators. It puts an unbelievable burden on the owner.
And actually reaching those owners, that's proving to be a massive hurdle too, isn't it? Especially with these older cars. Stellantis specifically said it's of paramount importance for owners to keep their address and contact details updated with the DVLA, that's the UK Vehicle Authority, like the DMD in the US or similar bodies elsewhere, so they can be reached in a timely and efficient manner. But let's be real. We all know how tough it is to reach owners of older cars effectively. People move. They sell cars privately. The new owner maybe doesn't update the registration right away, or people just forget. I mean, who religiously updates their vehicle registry info every single time they move house? So how effective is sending a letter in an emergency like this when time is absolutely critical and lives could be on the line? It feels kind of analog for a very urgent modern problem.
That's exactly where government bodies often have to step in. To amplify the message, enforce compliance in ways a manufacturer just can't. The French Transport Ministry, for instance, has explicitly publicly requested that all these Citroën C3s and DS3s under the Takata recall be removed from the roads immediately. That kind of direct public intervention from a national regulator, it's incredibly significant. It shifts the whole thing from a manufacturer's request or warning, which, let's face it, some people might ignore, to a governmental demand. Backed by public authority, potential enforcement.
Right. It adds a whole new level of seriousness.
Exactly. And it raises that important question about government oversight, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do these bodies influence the speed, the enforcement of recalls? What power do they really have to demand cars off the road, even if it disrupts people's lives? This very proactive, very public step by the French ministry, it stands in stark contrast to maybe slower industry-led efforts you sometimes see. It really shows the extreme gravity of the situation and the government saying public safety comes first. And what's also critical to grasp here is the scale of the problem already known in France. Stellantis had already fixed 481,000 affected vehicles there, out of 690,000 known to have Takata airbags.
Wow.
Yeah. Which implies a huge number, around 209,000 vehicles, might still need fixing just in France, including those 82,000 aging models specifically mentioned in reports. That's a lot of potentially dangerous vehicles still out there, even after years of recall efforts.
That's staggering.
It is. And it makes the ministry's direct intervention even more critical. It highlights a really painful truth. Even with the best intentions, persistent outreach from car makers, a significant chunk of affected vehicles can just remain unrepaired, waiting for a catalyst, like this tragic death, to force more drastic action. It really underscores the massive challenge of getting 100% compliance on safety recalls, especially as cars get older and change hands more often.
That is a staggering number. Frankly, alarming, isn't it? To think over 200,000 vehicles in France alone might still have these faulty, potentially deadly airbags,
even after a decade of recalls. Okay, so this immediate crisis is severe and needs urgent attention, but to really get the depth, the persistence, the implications, we absolutely have to trace it back to the source, the huge global catastrophe that was the Takata airbag scandal. Because this isn't new. Problems with Takata airbags first rocked the auto industry in 2013. It involved a series of deaths and injuries caused by airbags made at their Mexican plant that, terrifyingly, failed to inflate during collisions.
Oh.
The initial recall then was for about 3.6 million cars. Seems like a lot, but So let's really set the scene for you, the listener. 2013, this thing first surfaces. What was that initial shockwave like in the industry? How did this problem seem to just spread so fast, so insidiously?
Yeah, 2013. The initial discovery was a profound shockwave. Mm-hmm. It really reverberated through every part of the auto world. I mean, an airbag, right? It's probably the most universally trusted safety device in a car, designed only to save lives, reduce injury. The very idea that it could fail, or worse, actually become a hazard itself, that was deeply unsettling. And the technical failure, It was much more insidious than just, you know, a simple glitch. The inflator, these are basically small metal canisters with propellant inside that ignites to fill the bag super fast.
Okay.
They were degrading over time. Specifically, the chemical propellant Takata used, ammonium nitrate, it was found to be unstable, especially after long periods in high heat and humidity.
Okay. Environmental factors played a big role.
A huge role. So instead of a controlled, rapid inflation, This degradation could lead to an overpressurized explosion inside the inflator, causing the metal canister itself to rupture violently, eventually turning the airbag module into a kind of shrapnel grenade.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Expelling jagged metal fragments right into the car cabin when it deployed. Initially, tracing it to that specific plant in Mexico suggested maybe a localized quality control issue. But the sheer scale of production from just that one plant meant its defective parts were already in millions of vehicles worldwide across tons of car brands. Before anyone really understood the full scope, the series of deaths and injuries that started emerging were just horrifying. Victims injured not by the crash, but by the safety device itself. That initial recall, 3.6 million cars, seemed massive then. Dominated headlines, everyone scrambled. But as we now know all too well, that was just the very, very tip of a colossal iceberg. Car makers who rely so heavily on suppliers for almost every part suddenly face this existential crisis. Trust, safety, liability, all questioned. They had to scramble to figure out which of their many models had these specific Takata inflators and the speed it spread. It was a chilling demonstration of the global supply chain. One supplier making a critical part for dozens of car makers globally. It means a localized defect can cascade into an unprecedented global catastrophe really, really fast, affecting entire fleets across continents.
And it absolutely did escalate dramatically, far beyond that initial 3.6 million. This wasn't just a few models or a problem in one region for long. The fatalities that followed in the U.S. really drove home the severity. It led NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, to order this ongoing nationwide recall of more than 42 million cars, which became the largest automotive recall in U.S. history. And what's even more horrifying, as you just explained, these airbags weren't just failing to inflate, they were spraying the cabin with metal fragments. Mm-hmm. And as a direct result of this massive systemic failure, Takata, once this global powerhouse, filed for bankruptcy in 2017. So that jump, 3.6 million to over 42 million in the U.S. alone, it's just mind-boggling. Can you really articulate the true scale of this? And that dual danger, not inflating and throwing shrapnel?
Yeah, the leap from 3.6 to over 42 million.
Yeah.
It wasn't just numbers. It was a fundamental, terrifying shift in understanding the problem's scope and nature. Initially, maybe the hope was only certain batches were bad, right?
Yeah.
Specific production runs. But as more incidents happened, investigations got deeper. It became horrifyingly clear the issue was systemic, baked into Takata's inflator design and manufacturing process itself, affecting a much wider range of their products across many years. And that dual danger you mentioned, that's precisely what made these airbags so uniquely terrifying. It turned a safety device into a potential weapon. On one hand, yes, the failure to do its basic job, the airbag doesn't inflate right, leaves you unprotected, which is what tragically seems to have happened in the recent French fatality. The safety net just wasn't there. But on the other hand, and arguably even more insidious, the danger of it becoming a weapon, when that unstable ammonium nitrate ignites improperly, boom, excessive pressure, the metal housing of the inflator explodes, sends shrapnel sharp, hot metal pieces flying into the cabin at high speed. These fragments could cause, and did cause, severe cuts to the face, neck, blindness, fatal injuries. That was the exact cause of death in many of the U.S. fatalities that triggered NHTSA's huge recall. It was just a complete betrayal of the most basic trust a person puts in a safety product. The economic fallout was devastating, a monumental collapse. Takata, once a global leader, employing tens of thousands, key supplier to pretty much every major car maker, forced into bankruptcy in 2017. When a key tier one supplier, those are the big direct component providers like Takata was, goes under due to a safety defect this huge, it sends massive shockwaves through the whole industry.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It didn't just affect Takata. It forced automakers to fundamentally rethink their supply chain resilience, their vetting processes for suppliers, their ability to quickly find alternative parts on a massive scale. It raised this critical question for the whole auto world. What precedents does this set for accountability in the supply chain? And it established very clearly that liability can and often will go beyond the final car maker to the component supplier, forcing much deeper scrutiny on subcontractors, their parts, their entire manufacturing life cycle, the long-term ripples, other manufacturers scrambling to diversify suppliers, investing way more in their own testing of third-party parts, maybe footing the huge bill for recalls if suppliers failed. It was a brutal multi-billion dollar lesson in how interconnected global manufacturing is and how fragile trust can be in these complex chains.
And the problem, as we're seeing right now with Stellantis years later, it wasn't just the U.S., wasn't just a few brands. It was truly global. It's now thought that more than 100 million airbag inflators worldwide have been recalled by more than 20 car makers. Just pause and let that number sink in. Over 100 million inflators. Dozens of manufacturers. That's just staggering. This wasn't regional. It hit virtually every corner of the auto world. Japan, Europe, North America, everywhere.
The global scale.
Yeah.
It's almost incomprehensible, truly.
Yep.
Over 100 million inflators, over 20 major car makers. It means basically no major car market or brand was untouched. And that presented this immense, unprecedented complexity in managing the recall globally.
Yeah.
Every country has its own regulators, right?
Yeah.
Often different rules, different reporting needs, different enforcement powers.
Right.
A patchwork.
Exactly. Automakers had to navigate this complex legal and logistical patchwork, trying to track cars across borders, dealing with multiple languages, cultures, while also trying to get enough replacement parts for this incredibly diverse range of brands, models, years. The sheer volume of parts needed was astronomical. Created huge bottlenecks, led to shortages, frustrating delays for owners waiting for repairs. And on top of that, the challenge of getting owners of all these cars, especially the older ones, to actually comply with the recall, that's monumental. And it's ongoing. We're seeing it right now with Stellantis in France. Around 209,000 still potentially unrepaired there, out of 690,000 known affected.
Still so many.
Yeah. Even with the best intentions from manufacturers, mail, email, ads, trying everything, a significant percentage just remain unfixed. Often because of ownership changes, outdated contact info, or just owner complacency, lack of awareness maybe, or thinking it's too inconvenient. This truly global reach means that even years later, as this recent tragedy shows, these dangerous parts can still be lurking in millions of cars worldwide, silently degrading, waiting for conditions to become critical. It's a truly global long tail of a safety crisis, and it speaks volumes about the enduring complexity of modern car safety and the persistent challenge of reaching every single affected owner.
So, okay, with that really sobering history of the Takata saga, what does this new urgent Stellantis recall tell us about the ongoing persistent nature of these huge safety failures? It brings us right back to the immediate crisis and one of its toughest parts, the lingering danger in older vehicles. The recent death in France involved a 2014 Citroën C3. In car terms, that's now an aging model, right? And the emergency stop drive order, it applies to cars made as far back as 2009. These aren't new cars. They've been around, often passed through multiple owners. And that presents really unique, significant challenges for recall campaigns. Older cars, they might have changed hands multiple times. So the manufacturer's contact info for the current owner, probably useless, non-existent maybe. These cars might not go to official dealerships for service anymore. They go to independent garages. So owners might not be getting those direct service reminders or recall notices from the brand itself. It's just a huge, complex tracking and outreach problem. It makes it incredibly hard to ensure that critical safety info actually reaches the person driving the car now, the person who needs to act immediately.
This situation raises an absolutely fundamental question, doesn't it? How long does a safety recall stay active or relevant? Especially for parts that can actually become dangerous over time, like these Takata airbags. And the answer, as this case tragically shows, is indefinitely. A safety recall doesn't expire. It's a permanent notice of a defect impacting safety. The responsibility to fix it stays with the manufacturer, regardless of the car's age. However, the onus also falls more and more on later owners to actively check for open recalls.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, many people assume, often wrongly, that if they buy a used car, any big safety issues must have been fixed already by previous owners or the dealer. clearly not always the case. And it's a dangerous assumption. We're seeing right now the painful reality of this long tail for safety defects. These aren't problems that show up right away. The underlying issue, that chemical degradation of the propellant, it happens over time, often sped up by things like heat and humidity. So a part that seemed perfectly fine when the car was, say, 5 years old, mm-hmm. might become critically dangerous at 10 or 15 years old, as we're seeing now. And this has profound implications for the used car market. Huge. Buyers need to be incredibly diligent, proactive, checking for open recalls using the vehicle identification number on the manufacturer's site or through national regulators like DVLA or NHTSA. That shouldn't just be a suggestion. It should be mandatory, a non-negotiable step before buying any used car. No matter how old it is or how good it looks, without that check, used car buyers are basically inheriting potential silent safety hazards without even knowing the risk.
That is such a crucial point. And it leads us right to the critical role of getting information out there, broad awareness. The source specifically highlights the paramount importance of owners keeping their DVLA contact details updated so they can be reached in a timely and efficient manner. But let's be honest, we live in an age of constant information overload, right? Our inboxes are overflowing, phones buzzing constantly, official notices can just get lost in the shuffle. So how do manufacturers and regulators actually make sure these vital, life-saving warnings cut through all that noise? It's not just about sending a letter or posting online. It's about making that message hit home, compel action, overcome inertia, complacency.
It's arguably one of the biggest challenges facing public safety campaigns today. Seriously. On one hand, yes, manufacturers have an undeniable duty to issue clear, actionable recalls, using every channel they can with maximum effort, not just registered mail, but leveraging digital alerts, strong email campaigns, push notifications via car apps if they exist for newer models, direct, proactive outreach to dealerships who can then contact their customers. They need to make getting the repair done easy, as convenient as possible, maybe offer mobile repairs, free towing, but it is definitely a two-way street. Consumers also have a really significant, often overlooked role, staying informed, keeping records current.
Yeah, personal responsibility.
Exactly. If you move, update your vehicle registration. If you buy used, make checking that VIN for recalls a standard part of your process. There's a basic level of responsibility in owning a car that goes beyond just oil changes, especially as cars get more complex and parts have these long, sometimes hidden life cycles. And the effectiveness of mail versus digital, it's complex. It's an ongoing debate. Digital alerts might be faster, cheaper, reach more people maybe. But that assumes everyone has constant access to email or smartphones, and crucially, that they check them for official notices, which isn't always true.
Right. The digital divide is real.
It is. For older people or folks in rural areas with patchy internet, traditional mail might still be the most reliable way. But then the challenge is the accuracy of those postal addresses. Like we said, especially with cars changing hands, this whole case, the ongoing Stellantis recall from Takata, it really hammers home that no single communication method is perfect. You need a robust, multi-pronged approach. Absolutely essential. Plus, broad public service announcements, mainstream media, maybe even social media, to really try and ensure these critical warnings cut through and reach every single affected owner, wherever they are, however they get their info.
So ultimately, this entire saga, stretching from Takata years ago right up to Stellantis today, it's about so much more than just faulty airbags, isn't it? It's about the very foundation of trust, accountability. In this constantly evolving global auto industry, the Takata scandal led to the biggest U.S. auto recall ever, bankrupted a major global supplier. Now we see the French government directly demanding cars off the road, underscoring ongoing regulatory vigilance. So connecting this to the big picture, what truly profound lessons have been learned, or maybe, sadly, not fully learned yet from such a monumental crisis? How have industry practices like sourcing parts, supplier oversight, how have they fundamentally changed since Takata, if they have?
Well, connecting it to that bigger picture, the Takata scandal absolutely forced a monumental reckoning in the auto industry. It reshaped fundamental practices. Before Takata, maybe there was a bit more. Blind trust, you could say, in those big tier one suppliers. Manufacturers often relied on certifications, assumed a supplier's own quality control was good enough, especially for parts not directly related to the engine or transmission. Now, that trust has been replaced by almost forensic level scrutiny. Car makers are much more proactive vetting their entire supply chains, often putting their own teams inside supplier factories for ongoing audits.
Wow, really?
Yeah. They're demanding way more transparency from component makers. Detailed material lists, production processes. We saw widespread diversification of supply chains, too. Manufacturers scrambling to find multiple sources for critical parts, not relying on just one, even if it cost a bit more. And this wasn't just about airbags. It changed the blueprint for building a global car. pushing for more robust in-house testing, stricter material science research, because the cost of one component failure could be catastrophic for the brand and, tragically, for human lives. But the lingering danger we're still seeing with these older models shows that even with these improvements, the consequences of past failures can stick around for a very, very long time. This persistence of danger, years after the initial crisis, years after the supplier responsible went bust, it profoundly impacts public trust in car brands, in the effectiveness of safety rules. When a new death occurs from a known defect that's over a decade old, it severely erodes confidence.
Absolutely.
It makes people ask, are these recalls really working? Or just a partial fix? Is my car ever truly safe, especially as it gets older, if something put in at the factory can degrade into a deadly hazard? It raises fundamental questions about the life cycle of technology in complex machines like cars. Parts are designed with an expected lifespan, sure. But what happens when a manufacturing defect means that lifespan is drastically cut short? Or worse, the part becomes dangerous as it ages instead of just wearing out gracefully? And looking ahead, things like software-defined vehicles, increasingly connected cars, that could impact future recalls in really complex ways. On one hand, over-the-air updates could theoretically make recalls faster for software bugs. No trip to the dealer needed.
That's the promise, anyway.
Right. But for physical parts, like these airbags, it's still about physical replacement. Inherently slower, logistically harder, often more expensive. Plus, as cars get even more complex, hundreds of interconnected systems finding the precise root cause of a defect, isolating its full impact, that can become even harder, take even longer. The ideal, of course, would be to proactively catch these widespread component failures before they become global crises, maybe through better material science, using predictive analytics on component degradation from real-world data, or even tougher pre-market testing that simulates decades of real-world use. This ongoing saga with Stellantis and Takata is just a stark reminder that even with all our sophisticated tech, the human elements, oversight, accountability, and active consumer participation remain absolutely critical for ensuring our daily safety.
So we've unpacked this urgent Stellantis stop drive order in Europe triggered by that tragic fatality, and we've traced its roots all the way back to the staggering decade-long global crisis of Takata airbags. We've seen how just one seemingly simple component can lead to widespread, persistent danger impacting millions of lives and fundamentally reshaping an entire industry.
And this raises a really important question for you, the listener, to think about. If a component specifically designed for safety can actually become a deadly hazard, and if the repercussions of its failure can linger for over a decade, affecting tens of millions of vehicles worldwide, what does this ongoing saga truly tell us about the hidden vulnerabilities lurking in our modern technological products? And maybe more importantly, what's our collective responsibility here? As manufacturers designing and building these complex machines, as regulators setting and enforcing safety standards, and crucially, as consumers who rely on them every single day, what's our shared duty in managing the long-term safety of the technology that fills our lives? Especially as that technology gets ever more advanced and interconnected. It's a question that really extends far beyond the dashboard of your car.